Good evening. The House fails to override Trump's veto of their motion canceling the state of emergency. Tensions rise as Hamas and Israel trade missiles in Gaza and charges at the UN. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, March 26th, 2019.
The yeas are 248 and the nays are 181. Two-thirds not being in the affirmative, the veto of the president is sustained.
And the Democratic-led House failed Tuesday to override President Donald Trump's first veto, salvaging his effort to steer billions of extra dollars to erecting border barriers and delivering a victory to the White House in a constitutional and political clash that's raged for months. The vote came days after Attorney General William Barr announced that Special Counsel Robert Mueller had found Trump didn't scheme with Russia to help his 2016 election. Tuesday's vote bolstered Trump's drive to build a wall along the boundary with Mexico, a priority of his presidency. Just 14 Republicans joined all voting Democrats in Tuesday's futile effort. And now that the Mueller investigation into allegation of Trump's collusion with Russia is over, House Democrats are shifting their attention and efforts to defending the Affordable Care Act, colloquially known as Obamacare. Why? Because yesterday the Justice Department filed for the entire ACA to be struck down, including protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Despite seeking to repeal health care legislation with no replacement in the works, President Trump told legislators that Republicans would be the party of health care. Meanwhile, on the floor, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi spoke in favor of the override attempt, emphasizing Trump's government shutdown that had failed to win approval of his wall.
Even when the president disagreed with us, he should have accepted the bipartisan, bicameral decision to proceed. He had taken pride in a shutdown of government for about 1 month because he didn't get his way on the border. After 1 month, bipartisan bicameral action by the Congress sent him a bill just almost exactly like what he rejected in the first place. And he decided to reject Congress's wisdom and Congress's acting with its authority to protect our borders in a serious, effective, values-based way. So we don't take this vote here today lightly. Even when the legislative branch disagrees with the executive, we respect the office the president holds and his right to veto legislation. But when those decisions violate the Constitution, then that must be stopped. Many of our colleagues from across the aisle joined last month to defend our democracy by passing Congressman Castro's privilege resolution. That happened in the House, that happened in the United States Senate. We call on all of our colleagues to simply show that same measure of respect for our Constitution today. We take an oath to the Constitution, not to the President of the United States. We take an oath that we must honor. The choice is simple, between partisanship and patriotism, between honoring our sacred oath or hypocritically, inconsistently breaking that oath. I urge a strong bipartisan yes to override this veto.
Now in the possession of Attorney General William Barr, there is no legal requirement to make Mueller's report public. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer added that Congress would continue to call for transparency.
We've always felt that the issues that affect average Americans, health care, climate change, jobs, is far more important to them and to us than what happens in an investigation. Obviously, you know, we might have said a few different things here and there, but the bottom line is very simple. In the 2018 elections, I don't know of a single House Democrat or House or Senate Democrat who did a single commercial on the investigation. They did lots of them on jobs. They did lots of them on health care. They did lots of them on climate. That's where we're at. Well, the bottom line is the issues that won us so much in the elections of 2018 are health care, jobs, the economy.
Senator Schumer, I'm going to say that There was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Now that Mueller is established, there was no criminal conspiracy.
Look, I'm waiting to see the report before I say anything conclusively. I don't need Attorney General Barr's interpretation of the report. I am for the report. And our main thrust on this issue is simply transparency. Release the report, then come to conclusions.
But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he's in no rush to see the report in its entirety. He says Barr's priority should be to make sure innocent people aren't tarred.
With regard to the Mueller report, there are two things the Attorney General will have to grapple with. Classified information and innocent people's reputations. And I think we ought to give him an opportunity to continue his work. He's done it in a very deliberate fashion. But throwing innocent people under the bus and throwing open classified records doesn't strike me as a good idea. And I trust him to begin to go through this. I hope he'll be as transparent as he possibly can. And at that point, maybe it's the appropriate time to discuss whether we think it is a good idea to throw innocent people under the bus and to release classified information. But not yet. He's going to still be providing additional report or reports that will tell us more of the things that we all want to learn about.
What about Chairman Graham's ideas?
Well, I think Senator Graham has raised a legitimate question. And the Inspector General and the Justice Department has apparently been looking at some of this misbehavior. And I think it's not inappropriate for the Chairman of the Judiciary Committee with jurisdiction over the Justice Department to investigate possible misbehavior. Certainly the House is not going to miss an opportunity in the coming months to look at what they perceive to be things that require oversight. The Senate is involved in the oversight business just like the House is.
A Justice Department official said it will take Attorney General William Barr weeks, not months, to finish reviewing Mueller's investigation report and make a version available for the public. It's not clear how much of what is made public will be in Mueller's own words and taken from his underlying report, and how much might reflect Barr's summary or synthesis of the special counsel's findings.
In other major headlines, Chicago prosecutors dropped all charges against Empire actor Jussie Smollett, who was accused of 16 counts related to allegedly staging an attack on himself and claiming to be a victim of a hate crime. The surprise development angered local police and Chicago's mayor. As for the Trump administration's attempt to repeal Obamacare, Brooklyn Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, who is the House Democratic Caucus chair, explained the urgency of the issue.
We're going to continue to focus on the issues that are of importance to the American people. House Democrats are focused on kitchen, table, pocketbook issues involving lower health care costs and increased pay for everyday Americans. We were very clear when we had our closing conversation with the American people about what exactly we would focus on in connection with our For the People agenda. Nowhere in the For the People agenda does it talk about Russia. Nowhere in the For the People agenda does it talk about collusion. Nowhere in the For the People agenda does it talk about obstruction of justice. The For the People agenda is about lowering health care costs for the American people, strengthening the Affordable Care Act, protecting people with pre-existing conditions, increased pay, and a real infrastructure plan. That's what House Democrats are focused on today, tomorrow, and for the rest of this congressional session.
OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma settled a lawsuit with the state of Oklahoma to the tune of $275 million. Over $100 million of that will go to the creation of an addiction treatment and research center at Oklahoma State University, while the rest of the funds will go towards court costs and medicine. The company's owners, the Sackler family, will also kick in at least $75 million over 5 years to the new center. The Sacklers also continue to face backlash to their nurturing of and profiting from the opioid crisis, both at home and abroad. Major art institutions such as the Guggenheim and London's Tate Museum are breaking ties with the family, whose members have been major donors for decades. However, the Brooklyn Museum is not one of them, since their donors are from a different branch of the Sackler family, which did not profit from the sale of opioids.
And with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu locked in a tight race for re-election, the Hamas militant group has suddenly emerged as a major vulnerability for the Israeli leader. This week's outbreak of fighting between Israel and Hamas, sparked by a rocket strike on a home in central Israel, was the latest reminder of Netanyahu's inability to find a way to cope with the Gaza Strip's Hamas rulers. Just 2 weeks ahead of the vote, Netanyahu finds himself facing questions from residents in southern Israel and tough criticism from opponents across the political spectrum. Following a meeting with President Donald Trump, Netanyahu was forced to cancel a planned address to the AIPAC pro-Israel lobbying group and return to Israel. Addressing the group by satellite, he said that over the past 24 hours, Israel had pounded militant sites in Gaza on a scale not seen since the 2014 war with Hamas. At the United Nations, both sides traded barbs as UN officials called for calm.
A new conflict will be devastating for the Palestinian people. It will have consequences for Israelis who live in the vicinity of the Gaza perimeter, and it is likely to have regional repercussions. This is why I ask you all today to join the United Nations in condemning the continued indiscriminate firing of rockets towards Israel. Such acts of provocation only dramatically increase the risk of escalation and ultimately damage our collective efforts to support the people of Gaza and intra-Palestinian reconciliation. We must also call on all sides to exercise maximum restraint as the situation remains extremely tense.
Once again, Israeli occupying forces have taken to the skies, dropping bombs and missiles on our defenseless civilian population, terrorizing and traumatizing them in a blatant act of aggression and collective punishment in grave breach of international law. What we are witnessing at this moment did not begin yesterday. It is part of the long-running campaign of violence and terror being waged against our people by Israel, the occupying power, by its military forces and extremist settlers. What we are witnessing is pretext after pretext being exploited by warmongering Israeli officials and again in the context of an election campaign. The Security Council must make its voice heard and act to deter further violence and escalations of this dangerous situation. The Council is duty-bound to maintain international peace and security and must not turn a blind eye to Israelis' violations and aggressions.
Hamas claimed yesterday's attack was an accident, another accident. Let me be very clear about that. This was no accident. This was a deliberate and direct attack on Israel. Just like every one of the 12,000 attacks before it. Today is a day for the Security Council finally to designate Hamas as a terrorist organization. Make no mistake, we will not accept a reality in which our children become targets of Hamas. We are determined to protect our people. If these terror attacks continue, the leaders of Hamas will feel the might of the IDF and will be buried in the tunnels of Gaza.
We were clear in the condemnation of the rocket attack, but now we believe it's absolutely necessary to avoid any scaling up and to have restraint. And our appeal is for restraint in the present moment for the people not to suffer even more, both in Israel and in Gaza and in Palestine in general.
Attorney Stanley Cohen, who represented Hamas in legal matters over 20 years, says it's all about Netanyahu's attempt to keep out of jail ahead of a corruption investigation into his government.
What people forget and what the UN keeps evading and avoiding and what the Palestinian Authority, who has the representative at the UN, ignore is that Gaza is occupied. Occupied people have a right under international law to armed struggle, self-defense, and self-determination. The notion that a single rocket, so-called rocket, landed somewhere and caused some minor injuries in the light of ethnic cleansing and in Gaza genocide for years now in the light of 10,000 Palestinians that have been slaughtered, civilians there, in the light of the 300 that have been executed on the so-called border, in light of the 20,000 that have been shot, is simply an outrage. To conflate the war crimes of Israel with the fundamental legal right of Palestinians to self-determination and self-defense is perverse and obscene. People also forget the embargo in which 2 million Palestinians are living and dying at 1,000 calories a day, in which toddlers are dying in incubators for want of electricity, in which 95% of the water can't be drunk, in which there's chemical warfare going on with spraying of the fields and the use of phosphorus weapons over the years. There is no conflation. There is no moral, political, or legal equivalence between Israeli war crimes and the right of Palestinians to live in liberty, in freedom, and self-defense. This is all about Netanyahu's desperate race to win re-election before he goes to prison. This is all about Netanyahu. Whenever there is a political crisis for Netanyahu, he yells terrorism, he yells enemy, and he slaughters. And that's what he's doing right now. Palestinians will not be defeated. He can attack Gaza. He can slaughter Gazans. He can do whatever he's done. There are 11 million stateless Palestinians in the world, including millions living under occupation in Palestine and in quote-unquote Israel proper. This will only end in one way. And that's with a one-state resolution with full rights, no state religion, no barricades, no borders, and one person, one vote. Otherwise, it will simply continue to be a massacre by Israel and self-defense by Palestinians.
I think that's good. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye. Attorney Stanley Cohen.
At New York University this week, students protested the school's strong ties to the United Arab Emirates, which is a member of the coalition of countries waging war in Yemen. The protest was the latest in a series of demonstrations and was scheduled to mark the fourth anniversary of Saudi Arabian airstrikes on the country, which has led to one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. NYU has a campus in the UAE. Lola Jusiedman is an NYU student activist working to end the war against Yemen.
NYU has a campus in Abu Dhabi. Our president is close friends with Mohammed bin Zayed, the crown prince of Abu Dhabi. He's the most powerful crown prince in the United Arab Emirates. NYU has a scholarship program named after Mohammed bin Zayed. So students who are pursuing their studies are in some way indebted to this war criminal. And NYU's campus is supposed to be a public relations asset for the UAE. It's a way of saying we're a liberal country, we are a tolerant country, we are a country that supports education. And all of that is a lie as long as the UAE is tearing apart Yemen. And it's time that NYU reckons with that and withdraws its implicit support. We have a list of demands. One of them is targeted to the U.S. executive, which is to stop selling arms to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And our other demands include pressuring our legislators to continue pushing against U.S. support for the war. Another one of our demands is for NYU to divest from the military-industrial complex, because we believe that the military-industrial complex is equally responsible for the proliferation of war and all of the horrible weapons that the U.S. is sending to Yemen. Our other demand, though, is that the president of NYU and the administration of NYU make a public statement condemning the UAE's role in the war and therefore acknowledging that NYU has a special responsibility, given this close relationship, to use that relationship and to put an end to the war and to start a ceasefire.
Lola Jusiedman is an NYU student activist working to end the war against Yemen.
And back to the story about Gaza, our expert Corey Peterson-Smith of the Institute for Policy Studies agrees that the attacks by Israel were probably a result of internal Israeli politics, but are no less dangerous for the fact.
The Trump administration have really given the green light to Israel on any number of things, whether we're talking about the U.S.'s move of the embassy to Jerusalem, the U.S.'s recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The U.S. is certifying the Israeli occupation of the Golan Heights. And, of course, the embrace of AIPAC here. All of this is a green light to Israel to carry out the most aggressive violence. And it's true that this didn't start yesterday. This is really the latest attack. Israel, of course, has been using live ammunition against the great return marches in Gaza, documented by the United Nations that they've been aiming for the legs of unarmed protesters. They've wounded hundreds and hundreds of people, and they've killed people as well. This really aggressive offensive, but it's not new. It's the latest thing. It also has something to do with the Israeli elections as well. Israeli politics have moved so far to the right, even from where they were. Israel was always about controlling the land and using violence to do that. But the whole political spectrum has moved so far to the right, and Netanyahu is trying to prove his fitness to continue as the prime minister of Israel by carrying out even more violence against the Palestinians. There are more and more calls throughout the Israeli political spectrum for a more aggressive, more racist kind of posture. And Trump has signaled that the United States is happy to support that. So that certainly doesn't look good. I will say that the Palestinians continue to resist by any number of means. And obviously the Great Return Marches are this incredible show of popular resistance to just constant Israeli violence. And they are winning more and more solidarity of people around the world. So that is also significant. I mean, here in the United States, we have perhaps the greatest debate around U.S. support for Israel ever, actually. And so that's really positive. You know, if we can continue that conversation here and continue to talk about the reality of what Palestinians are living under and continue to be in solidarity with Palestinians, then that, I think, will be important in terms of trying to stop what Israel is doing and U.S. support for it.
And that was Corey Peterson-Smith of the Institute for Policy Studies.
Back to local news, Congressman Jose Serrano of the Bronx will retire in 2020 after 30 years in public office in order to focus his energy on battling a Parkinson's disease diagnosis. The powerful chairman of the Commerce, Justice, and Science Subcommittee said he plans to use his remaining time to fight for climate change research, a fairer justice system, and an accurate 2020 census count. Children not vaccinated against the measles will be banned from public spaces in Rockland County, announced County Executive Ed Day, who declared a countywide state of emergency in order to trigger the ban. The New York City suburb said the declaration will go into effect as of midnight tonight and remain in effect for 30 days or until individuals get the MMR vaccine. Rockland County, which sits 40 miles north of Manhattan, is home to a measles outbreak that is confirmed to have affected more than 150 people, 85% of them under the age of 18. And finally, Brooklyn's St. Anne's School is embroiled in a sexual misconduct scandal alleging years of inappropriate behavior by educators with students during and after their enrollment at the prestigious private school. The revelations were made public after a year-long investigation by a third party hired by the school to investigate these allegations dating back to the 1970s all the way through 2017. Six male teachers are alleged to have engaged in sexual misconduct, some of it unwanted. Others were reportedly not deemed to have enough evidence against them for a judgment to be made.
And that's some of the news for Tuesday, March 26, 2019. The news was anchored with Heather Chin. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.